Welcome to the Paranormal Pendle Podcast, coming to you from the heart of Pendle Witch Country in the northwest of England. My name is Craig Bryant, author, investigator and collector of stories. Join me as we take a journey into the paranormal, UFO sightings, cryptozoology and big cats. This is the Paranormal Pendle Podcast. Welcome to episode 47 of Paranormal Pendle, broadcasting to the Paranormal UK network at paukradio.com. So this episode is a little bit different. I don't have a guest for this episode. I did have a guest lined up, but unfortunately that guest wasn't able to make it. It's one of the hazards of podcasting, especially when you're an amateur podcaster. You do, unfortunately, sometimes get people who don't turn up for interviews or cancel interviews at the last minute. And despite my best efforts, don't always reschedule. I have to say it doesn't happen very often. I can count on one hand when it has. I've been extremely lucky so far. I'm hoping to get to my 50th episode soon. I've had some fantastic guests, some really, really great guests. Very interesting people to talk to, more people that are always happy to give up their time and talk to you about what they believe in and their experiences. And that's what makes the whole podcasting thing for me particularly worthwhile. So what I've decided to do on this episode is just do a bit of a sort of informal waffle, I suppose is probably the way it's going to go. About Rendlesham Forest, because Rendlesham Forest is, of course, a famous incident of potential UFO sighting in 1980 in Suffolk. And I was lucky enough to go down there last week, and I did some filming around Rendlesham Forest. And I have to say that it is a very interesting place. The atmosphere is unlike anything actually that I've ever experienced anywhere else. It's definitely got a vibe of its own. It's a very interesting place. The video that I did is on my YouTube channel, and I will put the link down in the description for this podcast. But what I thought I'd do is I'd just read some excerpts from various different publications that talk about Rendlesham Forest, and then just give you my thoughts, having been there and having walked the ground and seen the area where the UFOs were allegedly seen, and just the whole feeling of the place and how I, what my take on Rendlesham Forest is, having visited. So the Rendlesham Forest incident, it was a series of reported sightings of unexplained lights near Rendlesham Forest in Suffolk, which is down in the southeast part of England. If you're listening to this from anywhere other than England and you're not sure where Suffolk is, if you have a look at a map of England, look at London, go up a little bit into the right, and there's a bulge sticks out at the side of England. That's East Anglia, and it contains the counties of Suffolk and Norfolk. So Suffolk's the southern bit, Norfolk is the north bit. So Rendlesham, it became linked with UFO landings in December of 1980. Now, the events occurred just outside of RAF Woodbridge, which at the time was used by the United States Air Force. Now, the UASF personnel, including the Deputy Base Commander, Lieutenant Colonel Charles Holt, claimed that they had seen things that they described as a UFO. So the occurrence is the most famous of UFO events that has ever happened up till now in the United Kingdom, and is amongst the best known reported UFO events worldwide. It has been compared to Roswell in America, and is sometimes actually referred to as Britain's Roswell. So the UK Ministry of Defence has stated that the event posed no threat to national security, and therefore it was never investigated as a security matter. It's very strange. and skeptics have explained the sightings as a misinterpretation of a series of nocturnal lights, possibly fireballs, the Orford Ness Lighthouse, which is quite close by, or even bright stars in the sky. So the main events happened over two nights. The first one was the 26th of December 1980, at around 3 o'clock in the morning. And this was reported by Major Holt in a memo that he sent to the UK Ministry of Defence. He claimed that a security patrol near the east gate of RAF Woodbridge saw lights apparently descending into nearby Rendlesham Forest. These lights had been attributed by astronomers to a piece of natural debris seen burning up as a fireball over southern England at the time. Servicemen initially thought it was a downed aircraft. According to Holt's memo, upon entering the forest to investigate, they witnessed a glowing object that was metallic in appearance with coloured lights. As they attempted to approach the object, it appeared to move through the trees, and the animals on the nearby farm went into an absolute frenzy. So one of the servicemen, a Sergeant Jim Penniston, later claimed to have encountered a, as he described it, craft of unknown origin whilst in the forest, although there was no publicised mention of this at the time, and there is no corroboration from other witnesses. So shortly after 4 o'clock in the morning, again we're still on the 26th of December, local police were called to the scene but reported that the only lights they could see were those from Orford Ness Lighthouse, some miles away on the coast. After daybreak on the morning of the 26th of December, servicemen returned to a small clearing near the eastern edge of the forest and found three small impressions on the ground in a triangular pattern, as well as burn marks and broken branches on nearby trees. At 10:30, the local police were called out again, this time to see the impressions, which they thought could have been made by an animal. There was an author called Georgina Bruni. She wrote a book, You Can't Tell the People, published a photograph of the supposed landing site taken on the morning after the first sighting. So we now move on to the 28th of December, a couple of days later. The Deputy Base Commander, Lieutenant Colonel Holt, visited the site with several servicemen in the early hours of the 28th of December. They took radiation readings in the Triangle of Depressions and in the surrounding area, using an AN/PDR-27, a standard US military radiation survey meter. Now, although they recorded 0.07 millirotogens per hour, in other regions they detected between 0.03 and 0.04 millirotogens per hour around the background level. Furthermore, they detected a similar small burst over a half a mile away from the landing site, and Holt recorded the events on a microcassette recorder, and this is called the Holt tape. So it was during this investigation that a flashing red light was seen across the field to the east, almost in line with a farmhouse, as the witnesses had seen on the first night. Now, the Orford Ness Lighthouse is visible further to the east in the same line of sight. So later, according to Holt's memo, three starlike lights, were seen in the sky, two to the north and one to the south, about 10 degrees above the horizon. Holt said that the brightest of these three hovered for 2 to 3 hours and seemed to beam down a stream of light from time to time. So astronomers have explained these starlike lights simply as nothing more than bright stars. So Rendlesham Forest is owned by the Forestry Commission and consists of around 5.8 square miles, about 15 square kilometres, of coniferous plantations with broadleaf belts, heathland and wetland areas. And as I said, it's located in the county of Suffolk, about 8 miles east of the town of Ipswich. The incident occurred in the vicinity of the two former military bases, RAF Bentwaters, which is just to the north of the forest, and I actually visited the site of RAF Bentwaters. Again, it's now no longer an American US base. And also RAF Woodbridge, which extends into the forest from the west and is bounded by the forest on its northern and eastern edges. So at the time, both were being used by the United States Air Force, as I said, and were under the command of Wing Commander Colonel Gordon E. Williams. The base commander was Colonel Ted Conrad, and his deputy was Lieutenant Colonel Charles Holt. So the main events of the incident, including the supposed landing or landings, took place in the forest, which starts at the east end of the base runway, or about 0.3 miles, roughly about 0.5 kilometres, to the east of the east gate of RAF Woodbridge, from where the security guards first noticed mysterious lights appearing to descend into the forest. The forest extends east for about 1 mile, roughly about 1.6 kilometres, beyond the east gate, ending at a farmer's field at Capel Green, where additional events allegedly took place. Orford Ness Lighthouse, which sceptics identify as the flashing light seen off the coast by the airmen, is along the same line of sight, about 5 miles, roughly 8 kilometres, further east of the forest edge. At that time, it was one of the brightest lighthouses in the UK. So the first piece of primary evidence to be made available to the public was a memorandum written by the Deputy Base Commander, Lieutenant Holt, to the Ministry of Defence. Now, this is known as the Holt Memo, and this was made publicly available in the United States under the US Freedom of Information Act in 1983. The memorandum was dated 13th of January 1981 under the title Unexplained Lights. The 2 week delay between the incident and the report might account for the errors in the dates and the times given. The memo was not classified in any way. David Clark, a consultant to the National Archives, has investigated the background of this memo and the reaction of it at the MOD. His interviews with the personnel involved confirmed the curious nature of the investigation made by the MOD and failed to find any evidence for any other reports on the incident made by the USAF or UK, apart from the Holt memo. Holt has since gone on record as saying he believes that he witnessed an extraterrestrial event that was then covered up. In 1984, a copy of what became known as the Holt tape was released to UFO researchers by Colonel Sam Morgan, and had by then succeeded Ted Conrad as Holt's superior. This tape chronicles Holt's investigation in the forest in real time, including taking radiation readings, the sighting of the flashing lights between the trees, and the star-like objects that hovered and twinkled. The tape has been transcribed by researcher Ian Ridpath, who includes a link to an audio download and also a step-by-step analysis of the entire contents of the tape, and you can find that on Wikipedia under the Rendlesham Forest incident. In 1997, Scottish researcher James Easton obtained the original witness statements made by those involved in the first night sightings. One of the witnesses, Ed Cabansag, said in his statement, "We figured that the lights were coming from past the forest, since nothing was visible when we passed through the woody forest. We would see a glowing near the beacon light, but as we got closer, we found it to be a little farmhouse. We got to a vantage point where we could determine that what we were chasing was only a beacon of light off in the distance." Another participant, John Burrows, also stated, "We could see a beacon going around, so we went towards it. We followed it for about 2 miles, roughly about 3 kilometres, before we could see it was coming from the lighthouse." Burrows reported a noise like a woman was screaming, and also that you could hear the farm animals making a lot of noise. Holt heard the same noises 2 nights later. Such noises could have been made by monk Jack deer in the forest, which are known for their loud, shrill bark when alarmed. In June of 2010, retired Colonel Holt signed a notarised affidavit in which he again summarised what had happened. He stated he believed the event to be extraterrestrial and it had been covered up by both the US and UK. Contradictions between this affidavit and the facts as recorded at the time in Holt's memo and tape recording have been pointed out. In 2010, Base Commander Colonel Ted Conrad provided a statement about the incident to Clark. Conrad stated that, "We saw nothing that resembled Lieutenant Colonel Holt's description, either in the sky or on the ground, and that we had people in position to validate Holt's narrative, but none of them could." In an interview, Conrad criticised Holt for the claims in his affidavit, saying He should be ashamed and embarrassed by his allegation that his country and Britain both conspired to deceive their citizens over this issue. He should know better. Conrad also disputed the testimony of Sergeant Jim Penniston, who claimed to have touched the alien spacecraft. He said that he interviewed Penniston at the time and he made no mention of any such occurrence. Conrad also suggested that the entire incident might have been a hoax. In 1983, Omni article says that Colonel Ted Conrad, the base commander, recalls five Air Force police spotted lights from what they thought was a small plane descending into the forest. Two of the men tracked the objects on foot and came across a large tripod mounted craft. It had no windows, but was studded with brilliant red and blue lights. Each time the men came within 50 yards of the ship, Conrad relates, it levitated 6 feet in the air and backed away. They followed it for almost an hour, through the woods and across a field, until it took off at phenomenal speed. Acting on the reports made by his men, Colonel Conrad began a brief investigation of the incident in the morning. He went into the forest and located a triangular pattern ostensibly made by the tripod legs. He did interview two of the eyewitnesses and concludes, "Those lads saw something, but I don't know what it was." Suffolk police were called to the scene on the night of the initial sighting and again the following morning, but found nothing unusual. On the night of the initial incident, they reported that the only lights visible were from Orford Lighthouse. They attributed the indentations in the ground to animals. The Suffolk Constabulary file on the case was released in 2005 under the UK's Freedom of Information Act and can be accessed on their website. It includes a letter dated the 28th of July 1999, written by Inspector Mike Topless, who notes that one of the police constables who attended the scene on the first night returned to the site in daylight in case he'd missed something. "There was nothing to be seen," he said, and he remains unconvinced that the occurrence was genuine. The immediate area was swept by powerful light beams from a landing beacon at RAF Bentwaters and the Orford Ness Lighthouse. I know from personal experience that at night, in certain weather and cloud conditions, those beams were very pronounced and certainly caused strange visual effects. Evidence of a substantial MOD file on the subject led to claims of a cover-up. Some interpreted this as part of a larger pattern of information suppression concerning the true nature of unidentified flying objects by both the United States and British governments. However, when the file was released in 2001, it turned out to consist mostly of internal correspondence and responses to inquiries from the public. The lack of any in-depth investigation in the publicity released documents is consistent with the MOD's earlier statement that they never took the case seriously. Included in the release files is an explanation given by Defence Minister Lord Trefgame as to why the MOD did not investigate further. So one proposed theory is that the incident was a hoax. The BBC reported that a former US security policeman, Kevin Conder, claimed responsibility for creating strange lights in the forest by driving around in a police vehicle whose lights had been modified. However, there is no evidence that this prank took place on the night in question. Other explanations to the incident have included a downed Soviet spy satellite, but again, no evidence has ever been produced to support this. The most widely accepted explanation is that the sightings were due to a combination of three main factors. The initial sighting at 3 a.m. on the 26th of December, when the airman saw something apparently descending into the forest, coincided with the appearance of a bright fireball over southern England, and such fireballs are a common source of UFO reports. The supposed landing marks were identified by police and foresters as rabbit diggings. No evidence has emerged to confirm that anything actually came down in the forest. According to the witness statements from the 26th of December, the flashing lights seen from the forest lay in the same direction as the Orford Ness Lighthouse. When the eyewitnesses attempted to approach the light, they realised it was further off than they thought. One of the witnesses, Ed Cabansag, described it as a beacon light off in the distance, whilst another, John Burroughs, said it was a lighthouse. Timings on Holt's tape recording during the sighting on the 28th of December indicate that the light he saw, which lay in the same direction as the light seen two nights earlier, flashed every 5 seconds, which was the flash rate of the Orford Ness Lighthouse. The starlight objects that Holt reported hovering low to the north and south are thought by some sceptics to have been misinterpretations of bright stars, which have been distorted by atmospheric and optical effects, another common source of UFO reports. The brightest of them, to the south, matched the position of Sirius, the brightest star in the night sky. In his 6th of January 2009 Skeptoid podcast episode entitled The Rendlesham Forest USO, scientific sceptic author Brian Dunning evaluated the original eyewitness reports and audio recordings, as well as the resulting media reporting of this incident. After a lengthy analysis, Dunning concluded that Colonel Holt's thoroughness was commendable, but even he can be mistaken. Without exception, everything he reported on his audio tape and in his written memo has a perfectly rational and unremarkable explanation. All that remains is the tale that the men were debriefed and ordered never to mention the event, and warned that bullets are cheap. Well, as we've seen on television, the men all talk quite freely about it, and even Colonel Holt says to this day that nobody has ever debriefed him. So this appears to be just another dramatic invention for television, perhaps from one of the men who have expanded their stories over the years. When you examine each piece of evidence separately, on its own merit, you avoid the trap of pattern matching and finding correlations where none exist. The meteors had nothing to do with the lighthouse or the rabbit diggings. But when you hear all three stories told together, it's easy to conclude, as did the airman, that the light overhead became an alien spacecraft in the forest. Always remember, separate pieces of poor evidence don't aggregate together into a single piece of good evidence. In 2010, Jenny Randalls, who first reported the case in the London Evening Standard in 1981, and co-authored with the local researchers who uncovered the events, the first book on the case in 1984, Sky Crash, A Cosmic Conspiracy, emphasised her previously expressed doubts that the incident was caused by extraterrestrial visitors. While suggesting that a UAP, an unidentified aerial phenomena of unknown origin, might have caused part of the case, she noted, while some of the puzzles remain, we can probably say that no unearthly craft were seen in Rendlesham Forest. We can also argue with confidence that the main focus of the events was a series of mispreconceptions of everyday things encountered in a less than everyday circumstance. In December of 2018, David Clark, a British UFO researcher, reported a claim that the incident was a setup by the SAS as a revenge plot on the USAF. According to this story, in August 1980, the SAS parachuted into RAF Woodbridge to test the security at the nuclear site. The USAF had recently upgraded their radar and detected the black parachutes of the SAS men as they descended to the base. The SAS troops were interrogated and beaten up, with the ultimate insult that they were called unidentified aliens. To enact their revenge, the SAS gave the USAF their own version of an alien event as December approached. Lights and coloured flares were rigged in the woods. Black helium balloons were also coupled to remote control kites to carry suspended materials into the sky, activated by remote controls. However, Clark's investigation concluded that this story was also a hoax. So, as you can see, there are various different theories as to what happened over those few days. I remain sceptical until something is proved. If I can see proof that something's happened, then that obviously makes a huge difference. Having been to Rendlesham Forest, I have to admit that the whole place was quite creepy. It was certainly very atmospheric. Whether or not that was because of the story around the name Rendlesham Forest and what it conjures up in your mind, maybe I was a little bit more on edge, maybe I was a little bit more sensitive to what was going on around me. The video that I've put on YouTube, I think, shows quite well what the layout of the forest is like. There is a huge area, and I did take some film of this, that was later cleared by the Forestry Commission. And you'll see it, there's a couple of dead trees, just almost petrified trees that are just stuck in the middle of this area. It's difficult to sort of gauge the size of the area, but it was certainly quite a few hundred yards across and quite a few hundred yards deep. It was a large area, and you'll see it on the video. Now the Forestry Commission apparently came in and cleared this area, and it's been cleared in quite a precise way. I mean, it's almost perfectly square at the corners. It's quite a bizarre part of the forest. Obviously, I've interviewed people in the past who've mentioned that when there have been alleged downed UFOs, the Forestry Commission have suddenly appeared and cleared out huge areas of forests where these UFOs were allegedly seen or allegedly crashed. Could this be a similar story at Rendlesham? I don't know. If you watch the video, you can make your own mind up. It is a very, very strange part of the forest. The whole area, as I said, has got a real feel about it. What are my thoughts on it? Well, as I say, I'm sceptical. Was it a UFO? Possibly. Was it the SAS? Possibly. Was it lights from Orford Ness Lighthouse or stellar phenomena, stars in the sky? Possibly, who knows. But I think it's an interesting story. I'm glad I went down to have a look at the area. I'm glad I managed to get some film. Please, if you can, just take time out to click on the link on the description and just follow the link to my YouTube channel, and you'll see the video on there. I'd love you to comment about what you think went on at Rendlesham, hopefully you'll enjoy the video as much as I enjoyed making it. So thank you for listening. I hope you've enjoyed this slightly different podcast. I apologise for stumbling over a couple of words as I was reading some of the text, but you've got to try these things in order to move forward. So again, thank you for listening. Take care, everybody, and we will speak soon. You can visit my website at www.craigbryant.co.uk. Paranormal Pendle will return, and remember to keep watching the shadows.